we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Tesco website read by Rory Morrison.
Free delivery on wine and champagne and other great offers to fill your kids' lunchbox.
And our thanks to Jeannie Smith for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Andy Hamilton and Rebecca Front. And opposite them on my left, Bridget Christie and Jeremy Hardy. Andy, why has it not been a good April for May?
Theresa May.
Oh.
I mean, it just goes to show how 24 hours is a hell of a long time in politics, because there she was being cheered in the House of Commons, and then she went to celebrity parties with Lorraine Kelly, and then the following morning, there she was splashed all over the front pages. And when you see your name constantly emblazoned next to the word farce, that's never a good sign for a minister. And basically, the mistake that she appears to have made is she felt that clearly the deadline by the time which Abu Qatada could appeal against his deportation had expired. But the European court said, no, they didn't agree. They feel that it hasn't expired. And anyway, those expiry date things are nonsense, you know. Because it may say, you know, appeal by April the 16th, but it can still be used after that, you know. As long as it's been kept in the fridge, it's fine. Her other big mistake, possibly, was building a strategy around the phrase reassurances from Jordan. And the upshot of it all is that Abu Qatada will be spending a bit more time with us, and apparently he's very dangerous because they say that he was Osama bin Laden's right-hand man.
What's he been doing since bin Laden's demise? Has he been doing sort of, I don't know, freelance evil?
I don't know. I mean, personally, I don't quite understand this desperation to ship him out of the country, because I can't quite see how he's a threat to our national security, given that he must be the most watched man in Britain, mustn't he? I bet there are more cameras in his toilet than were at the royal wedding. I mean,
Could we all keep an eye on him? That's part of the big society. We could all take it in turns.
Yeah.
A vigilante watch.
What was the celebrity? Was X Factor Judges?
Was a celebrity agent, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was Jonathan Shalit.
He represents him. Simon Cowell or something?
I've met him.
Did he offer to represent you?
No. He's small.
There's nothing wrong with being small.
No, nothing at all, Andy.
No, there's nothing. I think you might be on the wrong show, Bridget.
But the party was a mistake, though, did you not think? Her attending that party, because instantly you sort of felt that Qatada's wish to destroy Western values, you saw them in a much more sympathetic light. I just felt it was... The other thing is, if we want to legally send him to Jordan, we just put him on an EasyJet flight to Portugal. That seems to me. Representatives from 47 countries have been meeting in Brighton to decide whether the European Court of Human Rights has too much power. This comes after Jordanian cleric Abu Qatada appealed to it once again over Theresa May's attempt to deport him. The Brighton conference finishes today, or yesterday if you're listening to the repeat, or God knows when if you're Theresa May. 2 points to Andy. Rebecca, who threw his £5,000 cap in the ring this week?
Ed Miliband. Oh, yes. This is all to do with party funding, and there was all that furore recently over the Peter Cruddas business when he was filmed saying, if you give me enough money, I'll arrange for you to have dinner with George Osborne, which was plainly stupid because most of us would only give that much money not to have dinner with George. Anyway, in the wake of that, Ed Miliband this week said that he was very happy to set the Labour cap for single donations at £5,000. Which was very magnanimous of him, although possibly less so when you consider that the union funding that Labour gets doesn't come in the form of single donations usually, or some of it does.
It's £3,
but some of it comes from this £3 levy, this subscription, which is sort of automatically deducted, which creates this wonderful image that I wasn't aware of, which is that, you know, next time you're in the queue at the bank and there's a little old lady sort of counting out pound coins in those little plastic bags, it's almost certainly going to be the treasurer of the Labour Party.
What do you get for your £3 as a union member? Do you get a sort of Ed Miliband badge with googly eyes and an assurance you don't have to have dinner with him? I don't want to watch. I quite like when Ed Miliband gets an idea, though.
Oh, God.
No, do you know what he reminds me of? Do you know, like a big Labrador who suddenly thinks of somebody at the front door and then runs to the front door? And as he gets to the front door, he gets hit on the nose by a pizza leaflet. It reminds me of that. There's a sort of...
Well, the Tories claim that under those Miliband's proposals, the Tories will be four times worse off than Labour. And if the Tory analysis is correct, that's quite surprising, because that would suggest that Miliband actually knew what he was doing, which is a bit of a surprise, as opposed to, say, when he was standing next to Livingstone when Ken started blubbing and Miliband missed the golden political opportunity to win over thousands of voters by slapping Ken round the face and saying, what the hell do you think you're doing, man?
I did like this sentence. Ed Miliband said, I'm in favour of transparency, and that does have to be looked at.
Why do parties really need donations? I've never really understood this. Most of this money goes on posters. And is there a single human being in history who has ever had their voting intentions changed by a poster?
I did once have a very surprising political poster in my bedroom. There was for a while, I think he was a North London MP, and his name was Dyke, D-Y-K-E, and it was a massive poster that said vote Dyke.
Did you vote for him?
Did I vote for him? I can't vote, I'm foreign.
You're not a British citizen?
No, I'm not a British
citizen.
So
you're taking someone's job, basically?
Yes, I am taking... I'm actually a qualified heart surgeon, but it was all I could get when I arrived. So. Ed Miliband has called for a £5,000 yearly limit on donations to political parties. Tory MP Grant Shapps called the announcement one of the most disingenuous interviews I've seen all year. But Labour was keen to offer more context, pointing out it's only April. 2 points to Rebecca. Bridget, how might the absences of the son be visited on the father?
Right. In an effort to curb truancy, the government has been advised to dock the fines from child benefit from parents whose children bunk off school. It's a £60 fine, apparently, if your child's truant. But obviously the government know that a £60 fine to a really rich person is no deterrent at all. So what they're going to do for rich parents is just tax their charitable donations. I was a truant. Technically, I'm still... I mean, I left school at 14 and I've not gone back. They're probably still wondering where I am, but now they know I'm with Sandy Toksvig. She's been a very bad influence.
The 60 quid, I mean, it might be enough to balance the books, because if every child didn't go to school, there would soon be enough money to educate them, so...
It's based on the misconception that the parent can compel their child go to school. But there's, you know, parenting involves a lot of bluff. I mean, you can't really compel your kid. Have you seen the size of kids these days?
Yeah.
I mean, it's all very well. You try and say to your kid, look, you have to go to school. It's the law. But all the time while you're talking, they know that they can just pick you up and put you in a skip. It's not... Yeah. It's just not practical.
Yeah. Also, it's hard. If they're leaving the house and you say, you are going to school, aren't you? Yes, of course I'm going to school. The fact that they're holding a passport or car keys...
But also, I don't know any parent who wants to keep their child at home. Say, obviously, I love my children, but if my son's ill on a Monday, I think, oh, I've just had you the whole weekend. If you're going to be sick, can you make it on a Wednesday? Because at least then I've had Monday and Tuesday off.
To yourself, yeah.
But yeah, there's the assumption that we all want them at home. I don't know any parent who does.
But I feel that pretending to be ill because there's something happening that day that you can't be bothered to face is an important life skill that a child has to develop.
Problem is the parent-teacher ratio. If there were one teacher per pupil, then they could just come out to you, couldn't they? If you don't go to school, the teacher follows you around.
Yeah.
And you're trying to sit having a fag by the bins in a shopping precinct with your mates and your teacher is standing there embarrassing you. Say, oh, this looks like fun. I think I might try smoking.
So, what are you kids into? Is it hippity-hop?
I mean... I was thinking there was that case in Ireland, wasn't there, of that... Well, it's quite sad, but of the boy who they thought he was being truant because he'd just gone missing, and then months later they found a skeleton in a fireplace that had been closed up with a medal that had all Irish hide and seek champion.
Is that true?
No.
But you know, that joke which Sandy just fell for.
It's very old. And my dad told it to me, and he's Irish, so it's not racist because an Irish person told me.
But Sandy thought it was a documentary.
Sorry. It's really...
Government education advisor Charlie Taylor has called for new measures to reduce school truancy. Great ways to trick your parents into thinking you're not well enough to go to school include drawing spots on your face with a coloured pen, dipping the thermometer in your tea when they're not looking, and getting the Times to publish your obituary. 2 points to Bridget. Jeremy, who's being threatened with a tortuous interrogation of his memory?
It's Mr. Jack Straw. It's torture week on the news quiz.
Yeah.
We've got torture stories galore on this fun-loving sideways look at the world of human rights abuses. He's accused of signing off the rendition of Abdel Hakim Belhaj, who was a Libyan dissident. This is the trouble. When you start trying to bomb the world into a shape that you like, all manner of hell ensues. Britain's been trying to subjugate Afghanistan since 1809. I know we're making progress, but if we haven't got the hang of the terrain so far, I think it's time to stop blaming the equipment, frankly. But Belhaj went over there to join the Mujahideen, and, of course, the Mujahideen were backed by the West. And Belhaj then tried to overthrow the dictatorship of Muammar Gaddafi. And at a certain point, Belhaj, he wanted to come here and claim asylum because he was being hunted down by Gaddafi. And we thought, no, better than you come here, we'll send you home to be tortured. So, you see, we should be glad that that people want to come here and to our country. When you're considering what a miserable country it is... The fact that people are prepared to come to a country that broadcasts Bargain Hunt, which must be known about, you know. And MI6, a letter from MI6 on MI6 letter-headed paper was found in the ruins of Tripoli from someone called Mark Allen, who's the torture rep of... of MI6. And it was so Foreign Office. It was, "My dear man, I am so utterly delighted and tumescent with pleasure to have rendered to you the absolutely beastly, frightful Belhaj. I hope you have a high old time torturing the buggery out of him." And Jackie Straw is looking a little bit in trouble because sources are saying to insiders who are saying to reporters, he knew, and he says, "I didn't."
But didn't he famously have his eyes laser surgeried? And maybe he doesn't see well. So maybe he thought he was signing his AA membership, and in fact, it was a paper saying you're going to cover this man in duct tape and fly him to a North African prison, and he had no idea. Do you remember he once met Robert Mugabe and shook his hand and said, "How nice to meet you," and then he said afterwards, "I'm sorry, it was a bit dark, I didn't know who it was."
I try not to be rude or annoyed by people being a bit incompetent, but it's like when a waiter forgets your order, you think... That is all you have to do, really. It's not like, "I have a quest for you. You must find the singing ringing tree which will lead you to the path of Gandor." If you're arrogant enough to think you have the right to tell other people what to do, which is what politicians are, then you ought to pay attention.
You ought to learn the faces.
If Jack Straw is found to have signed off his sending in 6 years of torture in a Libyan prison, I think he should have to go to Tripoli in person and not only say he's sorry, but mean it. He should have to really mean it.
He's going to struggle to find the right card in Clinton's. I don't think they do a "sorry we help people torture you" card.
No.
"Sorry I did what I did in order, which ended in your horrible torture."
Foreign Secretary Jack Straw is being sued by Abdel Hakim Belhaj, a Libyan military commander who alleges that Straw signed papers ordering his extraordinary rendition. Very quickly, extra point, if anybody knows who the former minister is that's been calling for the Freedom of Information Law to be rewritten, the very information law that we will use to get this information forward.
Oh.
It's Jack Straw. That's a point to me. At the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Rebecca have got 4 points, but so too have Bridget and Jeremy. We start round two with a cutting spotted on BBC News Online.
The first e-ink reader device that can be read in the dark has been unveiled. Barnes & Noble describe the 6-inch device as being amazing in bed.
Now, thanks to Nick Sarpries for sending us that. Rebecca, what's got green campaigners fracked off?
Well, yes, there I was the other morning, diligently separating out my cardboard from my paper and wondering whether it was more beneficial to the environment for me to put my empty tin of tuna straight into the recycling or whether I should wash it out first, given there's a water shortage. And then this
It's a middle-class hell, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. And so anyway, then this news item comes on and it turns out that the government is all in favour of expanding development into this non-renewable fossil fuel, even though mining for it causes earthquakes. And I did sort of think, what the frack is going on? You know, is this, am I saving the planet single-handedly? Because I just feel like I'm the only one making an effort. Probably not just me. But it is, you know, I'm putting in a lot of hours here. I don't see my children for all the recycling that I do. It just seems unfair to me that I'm putting in all this effort and the government saying, yes, we should all be recycling for all we're worth, but while we're at it, we'll just keep digging into the ocean bed and contaminating the water table and causing earthquakes.
But earthquakes in Blackpool.
It's in Blackpool, of all places. That's why they don't care, because it's in Blackpool. That's what's so awful about it. If it was earthquakes in London, it might be a very different thing.
I think the problem is you shouldn't put the word minor next to the word earthquake. I think it's a language problem. Earthquake's scary. The quake bit is scary. I think they should use a new word like earth wobble. Similarly, fracking. Fracking sounds frightening. I think they should come up with something else like gas tickling or something like that.
Well, there's 200 trillion cubic metres of shale gas under Lancashire alone, which I think is just under the amount the government advises you should keep in your garage at any one time.
I don't know much about geology, but it just doesn't sound like it's a good idea. They dig a big well and they push lots of sand and poisonous chemicals. It's like if somebody says, here's an idea I've got. It involves a hamster, a glider and a hand grenade. You just know, don't you? Let me stop you there. It's just.
But they also, I mean, a carbon capture sounds like a bad idea, doesn't it?
What is that?
The theory of carbon capture is that basically we catch the carbon that we're emitting and we shove it into holes in the rocks.
I'm going to have to do that as well.
Underground.
I?
You are, you're going to have to.
I'll have another set of special bags.
Yeah, that's right.
Future carbon.
Yeah. That's right. And then you're going to have to tunnel 500 metres.
I'm not doing it. I'm sorry.
And empty the bag.
There's a comedian, I don't know if anyone's seen him, called Mr. Methane.
Yes, I know him.
He can fart the Blue Danube.
He can. I've seen him do it.
He did it on Britain's Got Talent. I don't know if anybody saw.
Oddly, no.
No, Radio 4, no. No, but I'm just wondering if. I don't understand gases, but can you convert.
You can convert it back into farts, I think. So all this gas from Blackpool, they can convert it into farts. For people who haven't got IBS, people who are IBS deficient. I know Mr. Methane, his name's Paul. It's yoga. You inhale through your anus. You learn how to inhale.
Hang on.
It's true. It's true.
You know, you said you're not a geologist. Well, I'm not a doctor.
Listen.
I'm reasonably confident that you don't inhale.
Listen, you can if you do yoga. Any yogi will tell you, hey, boo-boo, I'm going to breathe in through my asshole. It's true.
How did we get here? How does this happen to
us? Listen.
Hear me out, doctor. I will not be censored. I will not be censored in my own country.
You are talking through the same part of the body as Mr. Methane makes a living.
The one thing we should make clear to the listeners at home, Sandy, is that this bloke probably isn't the answer to the energy crisis.
OK. ministers have been advised to allow the practice of fracking for shale gas to be extended despite it causing two earthquakes in Blackpool last year. Blackpool's rock strata is perfect for fracking as it contains small pockets of methane and also has the word Blackpool written all the way through it. 2 points to Rebecca. Andy, who made a right royal cock-up of elephantine proportions?
Right, well, King Juan Carlos of Spain fractured his hip in three places. He was on safari in Botswana.
Where were the other two places he fractured his hip?
Thank you very much. I'm here all week.
So I think present at the birth of comedy.
And it emerged that on safari in Botswana, he had gone on an elephant hunting trip, and pictures were found of him posing with his trophies. Not wishing to generalise, but in PR terms, being photographed alongside the corpses of elephants is usually a bad move. Usually. Especially if you are the honorary president of the Spanish World Wildlife Fund branch.
The whole family has got a sort of strange history with the guns. This is true. In 1956, Juan Carlos accidentally shot his brother, Alfonso.
Was he dressed as an elephant?
No. I do think he was very upset. He waited 2 weeks before he had him stuffed and mounted. But, and this is also true. Over Easter, the king's 13-year-old grandson shot himself in the foot, having forgotten he was wearing novelty rabbit slippers.
That is so easily done, isn't it? So did he think he was shooting rabbits?
I'd
so he
say.
Looked down, he thought, two rabbits that close, I can't miss.
King Juan Carlos of Spain has caused outrage amongst animal rights campaigners and recession-hit Spaniards by paying £27,000 to hunt elephants in Botswana. Facing rapid extinction and plagued by inbreeding, the Spanish royal family have have ruled for centuries. 2 points to Andy. At the end of round two, the scores are Andy and Rebecca have got 8 points, but so too have Bridget and Jeremy. Before we start round three, here is a cutting from the Korean Times.
According to a study by Saudi Arabia's Religious Council, repealing the ban on women drivers would provoke a surge in prostitution, pornography, homosexuality, divorce, and the loss of all virgins within a decade. The report was described as scientific.
And our thanks to Kerry Matlin for sending us that. Rebecca, who's hoping the fight to protect their name will be cheesy-peasy?
Yes, this is a good story for fans of cheese history, of which...
And I know they're out there.
There are many. It's a select band. It's me, you know, Wallace and Gromit, and that bloke from Blur.
I suddenly can hear a whole Radio 4 series, can't you? And now the history of cheese.
The Philadelphia story.
Anyway, yes, fans of cheese history may be interested to learn that Stilton is not made in Stilton. There is a place called Stilton in Cambridgeshire, and lots of people like me, because you see, I am interested in cheese, go to Stilton and they ask, you know, whereabouts is the cheese made? And they say, Leicestershire, because that's actually where it's been made for ages. Anyway, Stilton wants to reclaim its cheese name and say, we should be allowed to make Stilton cheese here. So that's the story. I will keep you up to date on all the other cheese history research that I'm doing. I'm still trying to find out which cathedral city it is. I am slowly working my way through string theory, but so far I've come up with no explanation for how they managed to do that.
The news comes during National Stilton Week. It comes around so quickly every year, doesn't it? Preceded by National Gout Week.
Melton Mowbray's the problem, isn't it? Because Melton Mowbray has the claim to being the home of Stilton.
Don't they make the pies as
yeah,
well?
They've already got pies. They can't have everything.
Well, they make that.
They're like a mafia organisation for rustic picnic foods.
Can't the people of Stilton produce something called I Can't Believe It's Not Stilton?
Yeah. The village of Stilton has launched a campaign to allow it to produce Stilton cheese. Stilton is a mature cheese. It goes on saga holidays and walks into rooms wondering why it's there. 2 points to Rebecca. Jeremy, now where did I leave my question?
This is the revelation that if you've lost something, you just say it over and over again and you will find it. That's why you see people in IKEA looking around going, will to live, will to live, will to live. And it's true. It helps you visualise the thing and you are more likely to find the thing you are looking for.
I think this is true. I mean, if you can't find your car keys, all you have to do is say car keys out loud and then your domestic help finds it for you.
I have a running commentary with myself all day long. And I worryingly dress myself in the third person. So if I'm lying in bed, I'll say, come on, Andy, got to get up. And then I get up. If I don't say that, I'll be there forever. And I talk to myself a lot, and it's useful, and it's calming, and I always get a lot of room on the tube. And, yeah, I thought this was normal anyway.
I talk to myself all the time as well. But, okay, I did once see somebody that I knew coming into view, and I was quite clearly talking to myself, and I sort of went, just going over my lines for filming.
I don't know. I was doing it once when I was putting money into the... You know those little Bernardo's models of children, those little collecting boxes? And I was chuntering to myself as I was putting money in the top, and this little kid came up to me very wide and said, "It's not real."
And this other kid said, "Could you leave me alone? I've just got a cut on my forehead."
New research suggests our ability to locate missing objects may be significantly increased by saying the object's name out loud. The authors were initially unsure how they were going to find funding for this project. But in the end, they found it by whispering "funding for entirely useless project" over and over again to themselves. 2 points to Jeremy. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Hamilton.
This is from Todd Colby. It's a press cutting from the BBC News website. And with audacity like this, it illustrates why we can never win the war on terror. An Afghan Taliban commander wanted for organising attacks on Afghan and US troops has been captured after giving himself up and demanding the $100 reward for his arrest.
Ms. Front.
This one has been sent in. Actually, there's no name to say who sent it, but it's a leaflet for the St. James's Church in Clitheroe. And it says, "There is a petition in the garden room supporting passing legislation that will protect children from the treat of online pornography."
Ms. Christie.
Well, this was just in classifieds. "Scotch egg for sale. After one bite, I decided it wasn't for me." "Quick sale, 20p. Oh, no. And a phone number, and then in capital letters, hurry."
Let's take a look at the final score. Bridget and Jeremy have got 12 points, but this week's winners on Charm Alone are Andy and Rebecca with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Dewhurst Examiner sent in by Isla Brown.
An Australian Army vehicle worth $74,000 has gone missing after being painted with camouflage.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Rebecca Front, Bridget Christie and Jeremy Harvey. The chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Rory Morrison. The chair script was written by Roderick Crooks, Simon Littlefield and John Luke Roberts, with additional material by Liz Hobbs, Tom Neenan and Jack Bernhardt. The producer was Sam Bryant.